Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and a gastronaut. In this episode, we're looking at antioxidants. Now, health and well-being is a bit of an obsession in the food and drinks industry, and it manifests itself in many different ways. One recurring theme is the benefits of antioxidants in foods and ingredients. Now, there's plenty of evidence that antioxidants can protect our cells from harm, but how does that link to our diets? Are antioxidants always a positive thing? Is name-checking them in marketing or on labels ever misleading? Can antioxidants actually be harmful? How does what we eat correlate with the number and type of antioxidants in our bodies? And what about supplements? What role can they play, if any, in this area? Well, with me to discuss this is the fantastic Dr. Christine Bosch, Associate Professor in Nutrition and Director of Postgraduate Research Studies at Leeds University's School of Food Science and Nutrition. Hello, Christine, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Stefan. Hi. Thanks for inviting me.
That's a great pleasure. Let's just start off with the really simple building blocks of this subject. What are antioxidants and why do we need them?
Well, I would say antioxidants are compounds that inhibit oxidation, as the word sort of implies, and they're able to scavenge free radicals. Examples for antioxidants are vitamin C, for example, everybody will be familiar with that, vitamin E, carotenoids, but also polyphenols, which we may have maybe familiar from sort of on the range of color they provide to fruits and vegetables. Mm. In food, antioxidants can counteract sort of the deterioration of food products. For example, we know that from prevention of rancidity or thereby increasing shelf life. But in vivo, yes, as implied, there may also be a protective effect to protect our cells from damage caused potentially by free radicals.
And tell us a little bit about free radicals. What are they? Why do we have them? What do they do?
Free radicals are very unstable molecules. They are very short-lived and therefore highly reactive. So they are actually generated. Every one of us is generating free radicals in our body just through metabolic action. For example, our normal cell metabolism, mitochondria actions, or energy production is kind of generating free radicals, as well as inflammatory reactions. They too generate radicals. And then we've got external sources for radicals. For example, air pollution, smoking, sunlight, well, UV radiation, but also, yes, stress and poor nutrition have been associated with an increased free radical production. So they are there, and it's about the balance. You know, if you think of free radical, so our body is capable to deal with lots of stress, lots of free radicals. So it's about the balance. Are there enough antioxidants or systems available to balance the right levels between antioxidants and free radicals or prooxidants?
Mm-hmm. And what are the implications of having too many free radicals? What can they do? I mean, are they precursors to some types of cancerous cells?
Yes, an important question. Free radicals have been associated with a number of diseases such as cancer, but also chronic inflammation, for example, or diabetes, cardiovascular disease generally, also aging and neurodegeneration as well. So a number of disease or complications are indeed associated with an increased free radical production.
Mm-hmm. Is there any sort of positive, useful function of free radicals, or are they just something that we really need to destroy in our bodies?
It really is about the balance. Free radicals are also signaling molecules in our body. So if you imagine you need a little bit of trigger hydrogen peroxide, for example, or nitric oxide, or some of the, so they stimulate, or they have a function in signaling surrounding cells or tissues in what to do next or how to respond, right? But if this is overshooting or chronic in a way, not being regulated in the right way, then it can be problematic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the free radicals. What about the antioxidants? So we talked about some of them coming through our diet. Do our bodies also produce antioxidants?
Yes, indeed. We talked about I mentioned vitamin C, vitamin D. Our body cannot generate these. But there are antioxidants such as glutathione, which we have in every one of our cells. So this is actually the most important antioxidant in our body. But there is also uric acid, for example, or ubiquinol. So we have compounds in our cells and circulating, which are providing antioxidant function.
Mm-hmm. And what evidence is there that eating foods that are rich in antioxidants translates into better health outcomes?
This evidence is in fact not too convincing, with the sort of recognition or discovery decades ago that vitamin C, vitamin E, carotenoids are antioxidants. There's been a huge interest, of course, and a huge push for intervention supplementation studies, but they have in fact not demonstrated that there is direct intervention effect with this certain group of compounds and then able to mop up or scavenge all these radicals. So this concept hasn't realized in the way it was imagined.
So you're saying that, so much of the food industry and claims made about foods is they say, oh, it's rich in antioxidants. You know, everything from tea to wine to, I mean, most foods, you know, manufacturers will often claim, well, it's rich in antioxidants. Do you think we should be a little bit skeptical about whether or not that's a good thing?
Yes, I agree. We should be careful in our considerations because we have to always be considering the safety of the consumers as well. So there are a number of studies indeed looked at really very high supplementation levels, and it's not considered safe, for example, in high vitamin E or carotenoid supplementation in smokers. So we have to really be careful at the same time.
So which foods naturally come packed with antioxidants? Which foods are we talking about here?
Many antioxidants are actually pigments, so they have colour. So this is easy to recognise. So fruit and vegetables, you could argue, yeah, the more colourful maybe your plate could be, the better in an easy way. Yeah, fruit and vegetables, apple, citrus products, but also cruciferous vegetables like broccoli and many other fruits and veg have shown with a gradual increase, with an increase in intake. So there is evidence that the increased intake in fruit and vegetables is indeed protective towards cancer, towards cardiovascular disease.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned about supplements as well. Mm-hmm. Is there any evidence around supplementing with specific antioxidants compared to just eating foods that are rich in lots of different compounds?
It's the intake of fruit and vegetables that has really been convincingly shown and confirmed in through systematic review meta-analysis, sort of correlating with a lower disease, chronic disease risk. Supplements, however, so we're talking, there are different groups of supplements, really. So if you think of supplements with vitamin A, C, and E, things like that, A, C, E, this has been looked sort of with a more critical view because of the safety aspect. But there are also the polyphenol supplements. If you think of, you can buy online or in the health shop a huge range of whatever citrus flavonoid supplements or many others. So this is a different type of supplement. It's very often as powder or capsuled. And the opinion in general is that the compounds are better available when consumed through food. So the consumption of a natural food is giving you a better availability of all these bioactive, these antioxidant compounds, okay?
Yeah.
So if you drink orange juice or you take these sort of polyphenols in orange juice as a supplement, there is literature clearly demonstrating that what is in the circulation is coming from the juice and not only very, very little from the supplement. So we seem to benefit better by eating the actual food.
And do we know if that's because it's just harder to metabolize what's in the supplements, or is it more complicated than that?
Yes, it's more complex. There is a lot about food matrix, you know, that gets lost, the texture, the matrix, sort of, if you have your vegetable as a veg, either raw or cooked or whatever it is, or even the juice, because there are other compounds as well. So we don't sufficiently understand also the interactions these play, supporting or inhibiting each other in if it comes to availability. If you have a supplement that is, for example, in a solid form, it's maybe not so easily soluble as well. So there's solubility and there is the interaction then with the other compounds. Yeah.
Yeah. And what about, I mean, so supplementation is one thing where you're taking a form of the compound that you think you need. What about fortification, where ingredients are added to increase levels rather than to sort of deliver a specific supplement? Is there much research on the effectiveness of this, or should we really lump the idea of fortification in the same category as supplementation?
Yeah. I mean, there are different types of fortification. You know, you've got the biofortification where crops are being bred with different means to increase perhaps carotenoid content. But this is mainly linked to sort of carotenoids being precursors for vitamin A. Okay, but each of these do have antioxidant function, but it's more to prevent deficiency. There have also been attempts, as we know currently, with the vitamin D in the tomatoes as a biofortification. But if you think of functional food, for example, so there is of course an interest in the targeted enrichment of food products with antioxidant or polyphenols or similar compounds, for example, into bakery, into smoothies, into so liquid and solid products. Yeah, they all come with challenges, right? Because you need to, whatever you formulate into a food product, you want to link a functionality with, so that you need to make sure that at the time of consumption, it's actually the compounds are there and they are available. And this is depending on the antioxidants tend to be not so stable, right? So this is heat, oxygen, heat, long shelf life. So all these are things which make it more challenging to sort of formulate them into food. But yeah, there are some promising examples that it can work, yes.
Yeah. Does cooking, like the application of heat in terms of cooking, generally destroy antioxidant properties?
Yeah, mostly, yeah. We have different groups of antioxidants. We have sort of lipophilic, if you think of carotenoids and vitamin E, for example. They easily associate or affiliate with oil, oily matrix. And then you've got water-soluble antioxidant like vitamin C and the polyphenols. So they actually, if you cook the food, it depends how you cook it, because they leach out in the cooking water, for example. So it'd be better to steam, actually. But generally, antioxidants are better preserved if they are in a food. Yeah, if they are in a good food matrix. So it depends what type of food it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So the sort of biofortification that occurs from the new kind of CRISPR gene editing, is that likely to be more effective in terms of usable, metabolizable antioxidants than something like supplementation?
Yes, I agree. There is a potential of gene editing to increase antioxidants in the food matrix in an efficient way so that they could be just higher in content, but similarly available to the crop that is not gene edited. Yes.
Yeah. So tell us about the risks of consuming too many oxidants or in the wrong form. What could possibly go wrong?
Well, the dose is one aspect. So we need we don't currently have recommendations or guidelines that sort of limit, perhaps in the one or the other way, but importantly, limit excess intake of antioxidants. And if you consider that many antioxidant type supplements may be available in a really accessible and uncontrolled way, so it could be possible to oversupplement yourself. Yeah.
And biochemically, what would be the outcome of oversupplementation?
Depending on the group of compounds, but you have to imagine that every antioxidant can in high concentration or could be a prooxidant as well, yeah?
Okay. So can you explain a little bit more about how that works?
Well, it's just the presence of high antioxidants in really high doses. It has, for example, been shown that N-acetylcysteine that has been tested in C. elegans, so a worm model, lifespan, and the very high doses, the lifespan was actually reduced in comparison to the lower doses gradually increased, whereas the highest concentration reduced lifespan. So there may be a concentration effect, but it may lead to the excess doses, may lead to excess generation of free radicals. So the opposite what you're hoping
yes. to achieve. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And tell us a little bit about other uses of antioxidants in the food industry. You mentioned earlier on that it's to stop oxidation, which is often, you know, the rotting process whereby which food disintegrates and is no longer fit to eat. How else are antioxidants used?
One really big application is the colouring. So many antioxidants are pigments, so they have tinctorial properties. And if you think of carotenoids, for example, they are heavily being used and they've got the color hues are sort of from yellow, orangey to reddish, so sort of a range. But it depends on the type of the product, whether it's a cheese or whether it's an ice cream or a smoothie or a tea or anything else. So what sort of what group of compounds you would want to use, for example, there are anthocyanins
yes, which are sort of
the red berries, really, so they have reddish, bluish appearance. It depends on the pH as well of the food product. That's really important. That is also a limitation of, for example, of anthocyanins. They are not as broadly stable through the pH range in comparison perhaps to betalains, so they are the beet under the red pigment. So it depends on the product to be stained or coloured.
Yeah, and if any of our listeners are interested in this idea of the instability of antioxidants, a really easy way to look at this is to get a little bit of red cabbage and then chop it up, put it in a hand blender or put it in a blender with a little bit of water and then strain that sort of juice that you get, which is a deep purple colour, into just a big jug of water. Then you change the acidity. So you mentioned it's a lot to do with the pH content. So if you add a little bit of lemon juice, that blue colour will suddenly turn bright pink, and lemon juice or vinegar or any acids like that. And then if you add a base, so the obvious thing is if you've got some washing powder around in the house, add some washing powder to it and it will turn green. And the weird thing is you can flip it back again by adding a load more lemon juice or vinegar again, and it literally changes colour. So that's the sort of the instability. Yeah, it's fun, it looks like magic, but it's just the science of how the anthocyanins work as a pH indicator. And I think that's particularly fascinating. Now, from your point of view, Christine, and just step away from your world as an academic, because so many products talk about, and people who talk about products, the marketing of products, talks about antioxidants in so many different things: wine, chocolate, tea, seaweed products. You know, it's the A word is dropped all the time. Now, is it over the top? Should we just be a bit more cynical about people mentioning the word?
We have to be clear that that antioxidants may benefit us in very different ways. So a combination, a healthy combination through the diet of different, through a diet rich in fruit and vegetables, giving us the range of colors, the range of antioxidants. So this is certainly something we should be looking at rather than focusing on one specific super berry, so I don't think we can label individual components of food to make that difference. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's the range of compounds. Yeah, if that answers the question.
Sort of. I mean, when you hear people on the radio say wine's great for you because it's got some antioxidants in, do you kind of go, yeah, not really? The risks outweigh the benefits.
Yeah, well, in the wine specifically, there is also the alcohol. I think, as with many things, everything in moderation. Excess consumption of any individual item, I would not encourage.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned a lot that's a lot that we don't know about antioxidants yet and about the function of it and things like that. So what are the things that we really need to know earliest? What are the urgent answers that we need?
So myself, researching on the mechanistic aspects of antioxidants, so is better understanding of these and the interaction with the compounds in the sort of food matrix. As I said, they don't come as the extracted individual compounds. They come in as a complex mixture. So there is much more emphasis in my own, but also in other people's research, on understanding the contributions of these individual, of the fiber types, of maybe also the sugars and the different types of polyphenols in sort of shaping the benefit we get out of it. Because whatever we eat, yes, there is uptake in our small intestine, but there is also a conversion in our large intestine. If you think of all those bacterial populations, they generate, they break down where they want to feed, and then they break down and generate a huge amount of other metabolites, which we benefit from as well. So this kind of has put an additional layer on the benefits which we could have from, for example, antioxidants.
Yeah.
So it's to increase our understanding on all these complex processes and metabolism. But also, I think we should consider working towards recommendations for the population, you know, to have some sort of guidelines. You want to encourage people to eat more fruit and veg. And we know on average it's 5 a day campaign. So that's really targeted to help people achieving that. And we know it is difficult. We know that ourselves, it's not every day. We don't manage perhaps, but so it's kind of really helping, encouraging people to achieve that, but also from the other side, not to consume in excess.
Yeah, absolutely. And just my last very short question is, what is the biggest myth about antioxidants? What is there one cliche about antioxidants that you would like to strike down?
I think I mentioned it already, sort of, you know, the term, the expression super food, super berry, super tea. So this is kind of, so there is not one single compound. There's neither a single compound nor a single food that will make us stay healthy or get healthy or live 100 years and beyond. So it's always combination.
Yeah. So the idea of a single bullet that will solve a problem is missing the entire point about eating, and it should be about variety.
Yes. But if you know, just to add on, maybe if you talk, we're talking about sort of functional food, as that was mentioned, or biofortified food, if that can help for people achieving sort of a minimum what we consider as lower or minimum levels of antioxidant intake, if we could arrive to recommendations for what we feel like, oh yeah, we should really all have this X amount per day, etc. If food enriched with these different types of antioxidants could help with that, then yes, that's really good.
And how far off do you think we're having for the body of research to be able to make those recommendations? Is it near, do you think, or is there a lot of work left?
It's really difficult. It's not so easy because there are analytical challenges as well, and there are many products pushed on the market. As we know, there's a lot of innovation in the food space, functionalized products, but very often the science is not there, and really establishing having sort of these databases, also establishing content and information on availability of this compound, so that we can merge all of that and arrive at useful recommendations, I think. There's a lot to do.
Fantastic. Well, let's hope that a lot of that begins to unfold in the very near future. Dr. Christine Bosch, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you, Stefan. Thanks again for inviting me.
I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Food Matters Live podcast. Now, we'd like you to join us in our new initiative, Sustainable Food Week, where we're celebrating the influential people changing the future of food. There are a number of ways to get involved. We've got a digital digest, an in-person forum, and podcast opportunities. It's happening between the 18th and 24th of September. But if you want to be involved, you need to act now. Find out more on the Food Matters Live website or email us at info@foodmatterslive.com. And thank you so much for listening.